And statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
It ain't the destination. No, it's about the journey. It ain't where you're headed, but it's how you grow. It ain't about the trophies, but getting back on your feet, walking in your glory. So come on, let's go. It's time for Michelle Speaks. Yes, it is.
Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. It is your host, Michelle Lawrence, and welcome to another week of Michelle Speaks, where we cover the four W's: worth, wealth, wisdom, and wellness. But we're going to get the show started the way we always do, acknowledging the one who's made it all possible, and that is through scripture. And this week's scripture is a popular one. It is found in John, the 5th chapter, the 5th through the 9th verse. And a certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in the case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked on the same day as was the Sabbath. I have just read for you John, the 5th chapter, the 5th through the 9th verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of his word. I'm going to just spend one more time on verse 9. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. This is a very popular and familiar scripture. Most times it is preached, and it is talking about the ability to get up. Where is your faith? A number of those things around moving forward. I'm going to spend a little time about being made whole and the journey and the path to healing. The first thing you have to do is believe that you can be healed. So the mindset has to be there that no matter how long it's taking for the healing, that healing is on the way. The second thing is that never stop moving. You know, when we look at this man, he said, you know, well, others are getting there and I can't get there and I can't get any closer. Well, in 38 years, somehow you could have made it a little bit closer. Don't allow time to elapse for you not to keep moving forward. Movement, faith without works is dead. So you have to believe it and you have to keep moving. And then the third thing is that once you believe and you keep moving, then and only then can you be made whole. You have to embrace that there is a circumstance in a situation, but you must further believe that there is a cure and a healing. Moving forward to be made whole. We've talked about being made whole, and conversely, there is the other whole, the H-O-L-E. So how do we transition from that place of emptiness and into a place of completeness? That's what we're going to talk about today. It's time to be made whole. It is time to take that path of healing, and in particular, we are focusing on men. Men, it's time to heal. And so I'm excited about today's show, and I'm excited about the scripture that has set us off. This week's song is also dedicated to men healing, and it's The Best Man I Can Be.
Yeah, this is for my brothers in the hood, in the high rises, on the mansions with the maids. We gotta come together, y'all. Come on. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, 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 oh trying to face another day. Gotta stay strong. To endure this pain. I'm dealing with right now. It lifts my whole life upside down. Tell them about I don't want your help. I don't need your sympathy. No.
What can a brother do for me?
Say he can help you up when you are down.
What can a brother do?
Just heard The Best Man I Can Be, and you know, I don't normally let songs play that long, but the lyrics to that particular song always strike me. I played this song for the young men that were a part of Saving Our Boys, and I know everybody's like, well, that came from the movie. Yeah, but if you hear the lyrics, it goes beyond the incident in the movie, and it's, you know, my brother can help me be the best man I can be. And so I am excited about today's show, Men, It's Time to Heal. It is a continuation of a show from a few months ago when we had Marcus and Kevin on the air, and we were talking about what's happening, brother, or what's going on. And joining the two of them is none other than Ken Roberts. And this is part of the solution. In our follow-up conversations, we recognize that men also needed a healing, and there's a different journey for men than there is for women. So as we are moving into today's conversation, there is a charge and a call out for men to come together. There is a charge around looking for solutions and moving out of excuses, because even in the scripture, it said that, you know, he says, I can't get closer to the pool. Somebody always beat me there. Well, let's move beyond where we are and figure out how do we get to where we need to be. And pulling up our brothers, how do we move forward collectively? Filling the hole, the H-O-L-E, and becoming whole, the W-H-O-L-E. So I'm excited about today's show, and I've already mentioned their names. I'm going to quickly give an overview of who's in the studio with me. None other than Major Ken Roberts. You've heard him on the show numerous times, and I'm so excited to have him back. And yes, while he has a military background, he is also steeped in diversity work. He's done a great work around human resources, talent development and assessment, and lead learning and development. And so I'm glad to have you back with us, Ken Roberts.
Thank you, Michelle.
And to his right is none other, and I can do it this time without laughing, Kevin Covington just brings it out. But he is my brother indeed, and I'm so excited to have him here. And the work that he does with black male engagement is phenomenal. So glad to have you back with me, Kevin.
Thank you.
And the only one who loves to give me assignments, and he thinks he's the CEO of everything, not just big brothers and big sisters, but my dear friend Marcus Allen, who is doing a fantastic job as the first African-American man to lead the largest entity of Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Welcome back, Marcus Allen.
Thank you.
Yes, so glad. So, gentlemen, when we were last together, we were having some deep conversation on how do we come by solutions for, you know, men, and how do we bring the barbershop out of the conversations out of the barbershop. And subsequently, that led me to, we did a series for women called Women It's Time to Heal. And so that led me to, you know, there is a journey. Men started inboxing me and saying, well, you know, what about us? You know, you're always doing and talking about women. And so we're going to have that conversation today about men healing. How do we get our men more comfortable around the idea of healing and talking about healing? And we're going to start with anyone who wants to lead, gents. Don't all speak at once, though.
I guess I'll start it. It's interesting you said in your statement, Michelle, about barbershops, right, and bringing it out into the public. And just last night I was looking at, I think it was an HBO special, LeBron James was talking in the barbershop, right? And they were talking about some pretty heavy issues. Mm-hmm. And initially my first reaction was, you know, and they were just being comfortable, like the camera was not even there. And at first I was a little shocked because, you know, they're using curse words and they're using the N word. But after I got past that and I understood the content of what they were doing, then I took it a little further and I understood there was a process that they were going through.
Yeah.
And you can visually see it on LeBron's face when he talked about things that, this was his therapy session, right, with the world, right? And so, and I thought, how great is it that you can have everyone listen to you, and how great is it to feel so confident in yourself that you can be vulnerable to people you don't even know? Mm-hmm. And I think for many black men, it's always been taboo for us to really talk about what bothers us, right? And when we've come out, we've been ostracized for even feeling some type of way about how this system treats us, right? We've been, you got the Colin Kaepernicks who just came out and just wanted to say and stand up against, you know, this violence that's been happening to young black men and women across the country. And all of a sudden you get this vehement backlash, right? And so for black men, we understood that. And there's black men who are sitting on the sidelines saying, listen, that's why you don't come out.
Right.
Right? That's why you don't say, you don't talk about what's going on with you. You don't talk about all the atrocities and all the things that have happened to you, because as soon as you step out there, people are going to throw you under the bus. And so I think we have to change that dynamic, and particularly first in our communities. Well, we make it safe for black men to come out, and as black men, like, we have to open our minds to be able, first, to be able to do it ourselves, and two, to make it a safe environment for others around us to do it.
Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree with you 100%. There's some other elements that I would also kind of put into that space. And it really has to do with the role modeling. And so, you know, how do you get that confidence? How do you create a forum that, you know, makes it comfortable for people to talk? You know, and, you know, going to the barbershop and having that kind of carefree, random conversations about things, I think is one form. But how do we make it a little more formalized? You know, how do we make sure that the right information is getting out? How do we make sure that we can replicate certain types of behaviors that say, this is going to be a way for you to handle not just this situation, but this situation, and this situation. So, you know, organizations like certainly the one that you lead also provides those opportunities. But I almost think is we still need more grassroots kind of things, and, right. and it kind of starts with the family. But man, the family is a little disjointed right now. You know, the black family's a little disjointed right now. And, you know, how do we reemerge, we being black men, reemerge into that dynamic in a way that is more proactive than it is reactive? You know, we get us out of the prayer warriors and the moms and the grandmoms saving us to us being proactive and getting in and preventing some of the things that the society has kind of wrapped around us as albatrosses around our necks, that this is what you are, this is who you are, this is what you're about, when we're really trying to break the shackles of that.
Kevin.
I would say when we talked about healing, one of the things that came to me was, I'm sorry, one of the things I thought about was forgiveness. And we're talking about healing. Sometimes forgiveness is a part of healing. And then as men, it's synonymous. Forgiveness is sometimes synonymous with not winning. So I got to forgive you for doing something you did to me in order for me to get better. I'm losing here.
Right.
You know, because you get to go on and do what you want to do, but I've got to forgive you and then I heal. So oftentimes when we talk about healing, especially if it's healing from something generational, family, or, you know, something that you work with, something like that, that's holding you back, it's hard for us as men to wrap our minds around forgiveness to get to the healing part. So then as practitioners, as friends, as family, when we talk about, you know, you need to forgive that person, it's like you may run into a wall, because as soon as you talk to me, I could heal, but I don't want to do that forgiveness thing. So as we talk about healing, we have to be aware that sometimes it's going to require you to do something and to work at that something, and that something could be forgiving that dad for not being there, or that dad who was there physically but wasn't there emotionally and spiritually for you, that you felt more of a dad connection with your best friend's dad. But you had a father right there, which is something a lot oftentimes we don't talk about, because I've experienced it through my students, where you look on paper, everything is fine. You've got two parents, until you start to unravel some things. And the brother talked to me and said, my dad was just never there. He was there, but he wasn't there. So I've missed a whole lot of that downloading you talked about, Ken. You know, that the lessons you need to learn, he may have missed all of that. And he feels bitter because he sees himself not where he should be as a man. And how do you go back and say, all right, this is where I could teach you this, but how do you forgive that person? Because that person who was responsible for teaching you may not know, may not have known. But because you're in that role, you were supposed to know, and now I have to deal with that to kind of, so that forgiveness may be that step you have to get to before you get to the porch of healing.
Can I add on that?
Absolutely.
And just to follow up on something Ken said, yeah, I totally agree with everything you said, but I wanted to emphasize when you talked about the role model piece, right? And there was a study done by Harvard and Stanford recently that talked about kids, young black boys who are raised in communities that have more fathers do better. And they said not necessarily, the father doesn't necessarily have to be in the home, but they need to see fathers in their community. Right? And that speaks to your role model piece and some of what we do when we talk about mentoring. And I think just, you know, piggybacking on something Kevin said and Michelle, I think it's important that we understand before a person can heal, that hole has to be filled first. Right? I think if you're empty inside, it's really hard to go out and try to help other people or be a part of anything else genuinely or authentically. And it reminds me of a story, and this doesn't really have a color or a gender, but I think in addition to that whole feeling, you have to also know that you're in a community that's full of people who've been hurt, right? And when you begin to normalize trauma and understand that you're not unique in that trauma, you may have a unique experience, but you need to understand that it doesn't make you a loser or worse off than anyone else. We have to figure out how do we help them heal from wherever they are to get where they need to be. And one story recently reminded me of this. Recently, I ran into a guy who was a white guy who runs a nonprofit, Focus Athletics. And so I didn't know that he was a former Little and Big Brothers Big Sisters program. And so he and I developed this relationship. And his executive director finally told me his story. And he's fine with me saying this because I just was with him on a television show 2 weeks ago. And he shared with me that his mother killed his father, right? And he was at a very young age, and then he was basically adopted by a black family and grew up in the hood, right? And so they put him in Big Brothers Big Sisters program, and we matched him with a wealthy white guy so he can have a role model that looked like him. And then he grew up, long story short, now he's a very successful real estate developer who's adopted a black kid who started a nonprofit that helps mostly black kids who are athletes. And Christian Marche, the young man who was killed a couple weeks ago, who had the scholarship to Penn State, he was like a father to that kid.
Wow.
And so we started talking about trauma, and he was saying that until he had role models in his life that kind of showed him how to give back to his community and how that made him feel better as a person, he didn't feel, he never wanted to deal with the fact that he lost his mother and his father, which led him to all these challenges he had in his life. But when he got role models in his life, and then he saw a community of other people who were hurting, it gave him a purpose. And so I think at the end of the day, for me, what that said to me overall was, feel that hole, look to do something that fills that hole, and that's when you find your purpose. And I think everyone has a purpose.
But it's what you fill the hole with.
Correct.
Right? So as you talked about, you know, Colin Kaepernick, it took courage, right? Confidence, and being, and it cost him.
Yeah.
Right? So he was in a place where he said, this is wrong. I'm confident that it's wrong. I know it's going to require some things of me, so it's going to require that I have courage to step up. And then it's going to cost me some things. We have to have more role models who are willing to do that, right? The whole community, few, stood up with him. But for the most part, it was him against the country, almost, to some extent. There were some advocates, right? There were some advocates, but even our president got involved and took it to a whole nother level of, you know, it's just un-American, it's against the military, it's just all of the above. And yet he was willing. Yet he was willing to stand. How, if we don't get folks to feel, to see that role model, to fill the hole with the right stuff, with confidence and courage and sacrifice, then we won't get men back on that journey. So how do we get them to a place where it's not taboo to talk about my hurt, right? It's not taboo, and we use language that's more supportive, because I listen to some of the language, and it's jabs. Man up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
there's no language of, I got you. You know, it's, what you crying about? Yeah.
Right.
So how do we change that?
You know, I just think that we have to embrace the fact that being a role model doesn't mean being perfect.
Right.
Right? You know, I need you to be a role model. I need you to model this behavior, because this behavior, you now see value in it. You know, I don't need to, you don't have to be the perfect one. Colin Kaepernick was not the perfect one.
No.
And rarely are any of our role models the perfect one, except for the perfect one, and we already know who that is. But the fact of the matter is, many people already have a lot of baggage. They've had, part of their journey has been about falling down and getting back up. That, I think, okay, boom, there it is. Let's do it now. Now that you understand it, now you understand it better, so that we can build the capacity to, so maybe we can learn the lessons to prevent it. We're behind right now in trying to prevent it. We're now trying to, you know, just make sure that you understand it. Hey, this is the consequences. These are the consequences that will come if this happens. Let us, you know, build a cadre of people who are not perfect, but who understand that, so that then we can teach, you know, young brothers that, hey, this is going to be important to you. It may not make sense to you now, or maybe you see it in others, and I need you to draw the conclusions or make the connections or connect the dots.
Okay. Okay, I'll, how do we get to that place? I was thinking when I saw this, a lot of times people think healing is like passive. It's just something that kind of goes on, almost like you're putting Neosporin on the axis. It's bandaged and it'll heal. But it's really about personal growth. It's really about, you always have to do something. You always have to be active when you're healing. Mm-hmm. And a large part of healing is your choices. Mm. So I choose not to carry this burden. I choose to do better. And we have to recognize the milestones that happen. That when that happens, you know, it's like, you know, I'm healing, and I know I'm healing because last week I would have cursed you out, or 2 weeks ago I would have tried to hit you.
Yeah.
Or when you just said their name, you would have seen a physical reaction from me. But in my healing, it's like, okay, you know, it still stings a little bit, but I'm doing better.
Mm.
And we have to realize that healing is an active personal growth thing.
I like that.
That when we start to, you know, and we need to check in on ourselves. We got to have the accountability on ourselves and other people to be accountable too. So it's like, you know, if you're really healing from this, why are you talking about them in that way? If you're really healing from this, why are you going out of your way not to invite them? If you're really healing from this, why have you avoided talking to them?
Mm-hmm.
And the response could be, well, I'm not there in my healing yet.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you recognize it and you're like, okay, all right, I got that. I got to work on that. As opposed to, well, I said I'm over it, and I just kind of thought I'd wake up on a Thursday and be over it.
Mm.
And that's not healing.
And not being stuck there, right?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what the man by the pool said. Well, you know, I'm stuck. Right. I got as close to the pool as I could. And, you know, now I need somebody to come and carry me the rest of the way. But the acknowledgement of, I am still healing, or I'm not there yet. And I would also say, charge the question of, well, when will you get there?
Mm. The accountability, right? Piece.
There has to be the accountability, right? Of when will you get there? How can I support you in getting there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because at some point, if it requires action, it doesn't mean that you have to go it alone.
Right.
And that leads me to my next piece about, you know, y'all like to go it alone. I know. We're healing in this room, right? We are healing in the studio. They're like, Michelle. But that's real talk. That's real talk. When you said healing is an active personal growth, it is.
Mm-hmm.
If I am not intentional about the whole in me, no matter how much you say you love me, no matter how much you say you support me, no matter how you open doors for me, I am still empty.
Mm.
It's just like the potholes sometimes in Philly. No offense. You know, they come and fill it,
right?
And then the next 2 weeks you got another cone.
Because they didn't fill it with the right stuff.
Right? So if we are not doing that, if we're not checking in to have, there's love, there's nurturing, there's caring, but there's also accountability and inspection and follow-up. So you said you were going to get over that. How are we making out?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? No one's checking that part of it.
First, you got to admit it, you got a hole.
That's it.
Okay?
I can't check on you
if I haven't told somebody.
Right.
And I may not even have admitted it myself.
Right. Right.
Okay? I may not have admitted it myself. And, you know, at this stage in my life, I'm clear about some things that there's work that I'm still doing on me.
Mm.
Right? Okay? And because I'm still doing that work, there are things that I have missed. There are things that I didn't do as effectively as I thought that I was doing at the time. And so it's this kind of iterative process of checking and making sure. But now I recognize that I got to let somebody else know too.
And I think part of that too is also like what you just said to me, what first stuck out to me was framing, how we frame our story, right? And so I'm an ex-ball player, and so for me, you know, in order to get ready for the game, I got to have a lot of practice, right? And so I think sometimes people see you in your practice, and in practice you're going to fail and you're going to succeed. And so sometimes if you're not framing that in the right way, then it can make it worse, right? So you're going through your journey, and you're trying to get there, and you've told Michelle, hey, listen, I'm trying to get over this thing. And then Michelle sees you one day, and you mess up with someone, right? You go off on someone. You cuss somebody out, right? And then people are looking at you like, oh, this chick crazy, right? Yeah. Right?
He ain't healing at all.
Right, he ain't healing.
He's regressing.
But it's just like being addicted to anything else in life, right? We're addicted to anger. Mm-hmm. Right? We're addicted to emotion. And so we have to frame in our heads and with our circle, the people who are pulling for us to say, hey, I'm going to not just need your prayer.
Yeah.
I'm going to need your help. And I need you to be active in this, you know, to Kevin's point. But it's practice because I'm trying to get ready for the big game,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're right. There's only one perfect person. That's Jesus Christ. And, you know, the rest of us, we can only try to live up to that. And I think that's the part that plays a detrimental part in our community is the judgment. It is the, like, sometimes it's self-isolation, and sometimes people isolate you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and for various reasons, but I think as brothers, getting back to, you know, us as brothers, like, we have to be willing to pull each other's coattail to say, hey, brother, you don't mind if I have a conversation with you? I'd like to talk to you about what just happened, mm-hmm. right? Let's go through that if you feel comfortable talking to me. Like, if not, then maybe I know somebody that you can talk to about it. And I think a lot of times we just become bystanders. We let it happen. We see it happen. And we do the worst thing we can do. We talk about it, but we do nothing.
Mm. Wow. Yes.
Man, as we're going through all this, it's kind of sparking some things. I'm thinking about men who are in situations, just life situations, and they recognize they have a hole. But their audience to tell they have a hole are women.
Mm.
So I can't tell you that because I'll think that you'll think of me as less than a man.
Mm.
So I got to keep this hole covered, not filled, but covered. So if I don't have that audience, if I don't have that network, if I don't have that barbershop of guys to come talk to share this, all I have is mom, sister, and people who are women who really, really care for me. But in my mind, I've made up that this thing, manhood, is as static as this table or microphone. It is what it is. And I've been taught early enough that you just don't open up like that to a woman. Because the healing, we don't need to be healed from our strengths. We talk about being healed from our weaknesses or something that's making us weak. So now I have to admit that to you. Even though those in my network, if there are all women, they may already know it and see it. But I can't say it to you.
Right.
And it's like, especially if one of those components of my whole is something that's like a badge of honor. I put it in this context. When I was younger, I lost my father when I was 8. And I was always quick-tempered for some reason. But I know now because I was short and I was the shortest one of my crew and I had to be able to speak my mind. But someone once said to me, your dad was short-tempered. And I love my dad. So I thought holding on to the anger was a way of holding on to him.
Mm.
But it always got me into trouble. It's like, well, you know, you've got a lot of things to choose from that list that Dad gave you. Why are you picking that? So if you're holding on to one of those things that kind of remind you of somebody you admire, the hole can be a badge of honor, and it'll still hurt you.
The hole can be a badge of honor. Whew. We are going there. We are going there. We are going there. So what are we missing? How are we missing the mark in getting men to see the things that we've just discussed, to relinquish the badge of honor, to use language that is more affirming rather than challenging? How do we, you know, what are we doing that we're missing the mark there?
You know, all the parameters by which we define success in the black male community is off center. Okay, it's not in alignment with what we know as being successful. It don't take much to cut on the television and to watch any of the reality television shows and then begin to believe that this is, you know, a form of success, that a black male is to do this or is to look like this or is to have this. When in reality, the everyday, you know, having a job, understanding your role in your family, participating in your family, are much more important elements to that success than what we're seeing on television. It's just not lining up. It's not lining up in the media. It's not lining up in maybe even in our home lives because of that dysfunctionality that exists, in our family structure right now. One of the most exciting things that I see when I'm walking down the street is if I see a black male with his children in tow. Whether they're going to the barbershop, to the supermarket, to the car wash, or to the movie, I mean, whatever they're doing, just to see that, I mean, it's a source of pride to me. Now, why wouldn't we see that collectively, you know, not just individually, that's just Ken Roberts, but why wouldn't we see that collectively, you know, do you know how many stereotypes that person, that brother right there is breaking just by walking down the street with his children in his hand. Right. Every time I see it, I stop and say, mm-hmm. Is that kind of silent point or look or
right.
I want to acknowledge you because I don't know if anyone else will acknowledge you for what may seem very small. But builds into a character or an understanding of what makes this whole thing work, and understanding your role in making it work.
Right.
The affirmation and the acknowledgement, I hear you, Ken, is huge. And you know, I can speak for me when I see that. When I see black men with their children, I do the same thing. Right. I will not speak for all women, but it's rare and exciting is in our mind. But to see it, you're like, yes, okay, you know, black men holding their own. This is happening. How do we stop making that the exception and not the rule? Right. Because we treat it as such an oddity. Right? It's rare. It's not quite eccentric, but we're like, oh my goodness. It's almost like being the only black person in the room and then one other one walks in and you go, yes! Hey! Amen, right? And I don't believe that that is the case. How do we change that narrative, right? I don't believe that 100% of the black men are not taking care of their children. I don't believe that they're just walking away. But how do we get that narrative changed? How do we shift it?
Well, I think, I was raised, you know, down south. I'm a southern guy, and I was raised in the church. And so, Michelle, this won't come to any surprise but I just think that, you know, what you were talking about, you see it every time you go to church, right? And I think the church as an institution has to be at the center of our community, regardless of your faith, right? Regardless of your faith, non-denominational, Muslim, whatever it is. And I think, you know, if you see a lot of the research that has come out, you see there's a shrinking membership in churches, right? And people are losing faith in institutions like churches. Even if you look at what's happening in the Catholic Church, you look at what's happening in the Baptist Church, you know, across the mega churches, the whole nine. Mm-hmm. And the media has taken a you know, when you see things in the media about that institution, immediately you say, well, I won't be involved in that, right? But then what's the alternative, right? What's the alternative for you? What's the alternative for your kids, right? How do you connect with community? How do you connect with culture? How do you connect with your roots, right? How do you connect with resources? And the church was always, at least in my upbringing, that rock, yeah. right? Yeah. And so, and then when you couple that with social media now, right? And many of us are on social media and our kids are on social media. And you see some of the just most egregious things on social media. You see some of the most egregious things on the regular media, the 24/7 news cycle. Mm-hmm. And then we underlay that with the fact that we know we live in a system that's not, that is actually, you know, undermines the black man's worth in this country. Mm. Right? So you're fighting with this system that we've been fighting since we landed here. And then the thing that held us together, even when we were slaves, was the church, right? And so to me, it sounds simple to me, right? And so I think for us to try to, you know, negate that or ignore that in our community is a huge problem, right? And yes, we're going to have leaders who are not perfect, right? And as soon as a pastor comes up and someone says something negative about a pastor, that's probably 100 people now don't go to church that week, right?
Right. It fulfills a situation where they didn't want to go anyway, but now right. now they can pick up a reason to do it. Certainly school, church, and probably you got to throw the barbershop, the beauty salons, the critical triad of information. Okay, you know what I mean, you know, in there, and you know, and the, you know, and the argument is, and the numbers agree that you know those influencers just don't exist at the same level that they did before. So now what? I mean, we know the reality of that, and so now what do we do? You know, we're still in that place where we have a lot of young boys and they're still defining manhood by things that are just circumstantial as opposed to positive and progressive, and it's going to move them forward in any large way. That's again continues to be our struggle to find that.
But I think one of those you mentioned this in your opening talk is, like, how do we get, you know, more role models and more people involved in this? Like the old adage, it takes a village, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these, you know, really successful men, you know, men of color here in Philadelphia. Yeah, even though Philadelphia has a very stubborn poverty rate, 26% overall, and probably almost 40% or more just in the black community. So almost one in every black person is living below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And so, but yet, those are some individuals who do live below the poverty line, who make great role models and who have something to offer. And I think for far too long, we put too much emphasis on how much wealth someone has or doesn't have, right? And it's like poverty has been under attack. Well, poor people. I won't say poverty, right? Poverty has continued to exist, but poor people have been under attack to the extent that people look at them with disdain. Right? And you don't know how that person became poor. It could have been a health issue. It could have been a myriad of issues that caused that person to be at this place in life. And I think sometimes we overlook those really valuable resources in our community. And we began to look at the people with the nice cars and the chains and the celebrity and the influence and all of that stuff. And we lose sight of, man, we got some real jewels in this community. And I think many of us know who those people are. And I think as we're going through that healing process, we got to bring them in with us, right? Regardless of your socioeconomic status, like, you have something to offer. And many times they have more to offer than someone like myself because they're right there every day and they're in it.
They're in it.
Right? They're in it. And so, you know, I'm always interested in working with the small mom and pops, the dude down the street who's trying to mentor 20, 30 kids a week, like talking to them because they are creating that ripple effect that we need in our communities.
So I always have more to say than time. And I'm going to push us because the commitment was we were going to talk about solves and solutions, right? We've given up some things to help identify where am I? You know, if I'm a man and I am in need of healing, you know, have I forgiven? Do I even understand that I have a hole? Can I find a safe place to discuss this hole and what to fill it with? How do I trust? Again, because that's also part of my challenge. What solutions? What would be, you know, just two or three solutions on getting men to heal?
All right, I'll take a stab at this one. I would say, I think we just have to, I mean, all of us have these busy schedules, but I think we just have to just make it a little more simple. Make it a little simpler. We need to spend more time with each other. We need to spend more time with our children, and not just our children who are, you know, from us in our charge. I mean, just children in the neighborhood, and just create those spaces. Oftentimes when we talk about mentoring and, you know, we throw out all the words, we also have this grant mentality. So if we don't get 25 young men and you've changed their lives in a six-month period, it's a failure.
Right.
You know, we've got the... If you can get, as I like to call my own boys, if you can get two knuckleheads to keep coming to your house, showing up, you give them some hot dogs or whatever, and you're having these conversations, and you do it consistently, whether it's at the church, at the school, that you're there and you're consistent with it, then you start to bring in other folks. And then they're like, there's something that they can count on. Mm-hmm. And as long as you stay consistent in your message and your values, oftentimes, especially our young men, suffer from people in their lives who've been consistently inconsistent.
Yes.
So they're there, they're not there. They say they're going to do it, they're not going to do it. Da, 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 da. But if you can get something as corny, I say it's just like, look, we're going to sit on the front porch and we're just going to talk. What is this Fortnite thing? How do you feel when you're doing this? Or let's go to the movie and then we can debrief. We can call it debrief. Mm-hmm. All we did was just go to Chuck E. Cheese or go somewhere else, get something to eat, and then we talked about how you feel. And then through that, I could find out that you're upset with James in your class because James made you feel this way, and how do you problem solve that issue? And then maybe they'll bring another person in your fold. And we, as they get older, and as we get older, I think we still need to do a self-check with our crew. You know, we come together, we say, yo, you know, man, we got to get together. And the get-together went from September to January, and you're like, man, I forgot to circle back, didn't say anything, and we haven't talked. We haven't even discussed my whole. We haven't even done anything of that. So we have to get consistent with ourselves and recognize it doesn't have to be that deep. Most professional games are 2-3 hours long. We can get a whole lot done in 2 or 3 hours with the game as playing as background. We can get you in with the game, but then we just start talking about stuff. What's going on with that? Yo, how's your leg doing? Doctor said, really? All right, this is what we got to do. I'm going to keep you up on your appointment. You got to do this. Listen, I really want to go back to school, and I don't know what I want to do. Da, 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 da. This is how, and then you start reaching out, and people just start offering solutions, ding, 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 solutions to the stuff we've been carrying around. I didn't know. I didn't know you worked there. I didn't know you did this. So I think we just have to get out of our own head, and it doesn't have to be as deep as we think it needs to be just to start it.
So that sounds more like the barbershop, because you went and you knew who was going to be there depending on the rotation of the Saturday,
right,
you know, so-and-so normally shows up, so I'm going to get there about that time and have the conversation. And the consistency of that became more of the camaraderie.
Right. But then there are a lot of brothers right now who are rocking the ball head, so we don't want to lose them brothers.
Right.
And the brothers
don't
have two locks.
That, yeah.
But, so we don't want to lose them. So we're going to call it a barbershop.
Right.
But we're going to get your head done from the inside out.
That's exactly what I like that. So we're going to call it a barbershop, but we're going to get your head done from the inside out. So that's the first charge I'm giving to the three of you. Yes, this is all about healing. We need there to be a forum by which, if it's built around sports in the background, if it's a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, after church, that kind of camaraderie and consistency allows for you to build trusting relationships. But someone like Colin Kaepernick, someone has to say, if one person shows up or if 10 people show up, I'm going to do it. So that's what it takes. It has to take someone saying, you know, I'm gonna do it. Similar to when I had to do it for women, right? When I did it for women, I'm like, well, 2 or 200, the workshop is going on. And you have to have that kind of resolve, because it's going to cost you your time, your talent, and your tenth, your treasure. And so that's an investment, gentlemen, that you have to be willing to make into each other and to the community of men. Now, I'm not saying that each of you are going to have something every single Sunday, but we will get to what we are going to do for men momentarily. So I heard from Kevin, Ken or Marcus.
I absolutely agree with Kevin. And I was sitting here saying to myself, you know, what are those holes, and, you know, what are the things that you know, you start to individually look at and say, man, I really got to get some more information about that. Or I got to find me a buddy that's going to go with me to do that, right? Right. So I'm over 50. I had to get my colonoscopy. I mean, you know, there's no, you know, sidestepping that,
yes.
You know. So, you know, hey, cousin. You know what I mean? You know, did you do this? You know, I start off with my brothers, and I start off, you know, and I expand to my cousin. Said, did you do this? Okay, yeah, really, you did that already? Oh yeah, you know. So you start to build, you know, some information, a repertoire of information, and people who are either in the same stage that you are about, you know, not doing it or doing it, or maybe you have done it, that builds the confidence for you to go ahead on and do those and do those things. So I think that identifies the whole, which gets to the conversations, which gets to the expansive topics that we need to cover, whether it's healthcare, whether it's counseling. I mean, in counseling, you know, and the early part of my life, I didn't really believe in counseling, because the first time that person would say something that I already said or thought about, you know, and I'm paying you, you know, $85 an hour to tell me the same thing I already know, I would just freak out. But now I understand it. I understand it better. I understand it. Not magicians. I understand it. You know, sometimes you need to be the person with the problem and not necessarily the person with the problem and find out the solution, but you go someplace to get that kind of help and assistance. So those are the things that I think are the starting points, like you were saying, Kevin, but we could help create a form of knowledge that says, have you had that conversation? Who is your buddy? You know, one of the things that we learned in the military is have a battle buddy. Who's your battle buddy?
Right.
Who's that person that you can talk to about these kinds of things that's going to be there with you when you go head on and you go to your, and master not just having health care, but actually using health care? Mm-hmm. You know, do you use your benefits? Not do you have benefits, do you use your benefits?
Yes.
You know, or whatever the topic may be.
Marcus, let's wrap us up.
So I agree with everything that's been said. And just on the solution side, I think we have to look at both formal and informal solutions, right?
Yes.
And I think we spend a lot of time talking about formal solutions, and I think we don't give enough credit to a lot of work that's already happening in our community. And Kevin and I, we met maybe earlier in the summer, and we talked about all of these different groups that focus on Black men. But they don't really communicate, right? At least they don't communicate effectively and not in a collective impact sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all those resources. But then, you know, the lay person who's out there, Ken, you brought the getting a colonoscopy. I've had 3 Black men talk to me extensively this summer about their process going through. They got prostate cancer. And talking with me about all the stuff that they've had to deal with, the emotional, the physical, mm-hmm. the thinking about the future, the stuff with their wives, like it was very deep. And I took some time to think about, and these are men that I look up to, and they were like my role models, right? And it made me think about, like, it's a two-way street when you talk about healing,
yeah.
right? And so for me to have the ability to be vulnerable to someone and they're vulnerable to me, we're healing each other. And I think we have to, from an informal sense, make it cool for black men to be able to have those type of intimate conversations with other black men. We have to make it cool for a black man to look at another black man in his eye and say, I love you, brother.
Right.
And mean it. Right. And so, because for me, I didn't hear a black man tell me he loves me until I was 20 years old. I was my college coach. I went to a black college. And I was like, I thought someone was gay about that. I'm like, dude, you know, I didn't know how to take it.
Right.
Right. But now, as a father of a son and three daughters, right, I understand what love plays in my life. And so I think as black men, we had, and as black leaders, we have an opportunity to talk about how great love is and how we got to love each other.
We are down to the wire, and I want to first and say thank you for going in deep, gentlemen, because we went there today. And for all of you who are Facebook Live, know that there are solutions and that these gentlemen have presented just a few of them. Look on Michelle Speaks Facebook page to know that there is going to be a continuation of this conversation with some sound, sustainable solutions underway. It is time for black men to heal, and I am so privileged to have had Marcus Allen, Kevin Covington, and Ken Roberts in the studio today to talk about such a healing. This is Michelle Lawrence, your host for Michelle Speaks. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of Michelle Speaks. We are looking forward to you joining us again on next week. But again, thank you for joining us on this journey with men. It's time to heal. Check us out on Michelle Speaks Facebook, M Speaks Radio on Twitter, and M Speaks Radio on Instagram. Till such time, God loves you and I do too. Bye-bye.
The destination. No, it's about the journey. It ain't where you're headed, but it's how you grow. It ain't about the trophies, but getting back on your feet. Walking in your glory. So come on, let's go. It's time for Michelle Speaks. Yes, it is. Michelle.